work it, make it, do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger. Work it, that
don't kill me. Can only make me stronger. I need you to hurry up, man. Cause I can't wait much longer. I know I got to be right now. Cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night, man. That's how long I've been on ya.
Hello and welcome, boys and girls. It is Thursday, September 13th, and this is East Coast Biased. I am your handsome host, Brennan Canny, and I will be doing the podcast again solo. Jason was unable to make it again. If you guys are at all pissed off about him not being able to show up for the last two times, please email him and express how angry you are with him, because I may end up writing him a very nasty letter very, very soon. Anyway, enough about Jason not being able to make it. There is a lot of NFL news I need to get into. I'm going to bring up the Philadelphia Phillies and their fading playoff hopes. And finally, I will end up talking about the Eagles' embarrassing 16-13 loss at the hands of the Green Bay Packers. First off, I wanted to talk about the Buffalo Bills and their tight end, Kevin Everett, who suffered a horrific spinal cord injury on the opening kickoff of their first game of the season. It was very, very difficult to watch the replays. It was one of those plays where he led with his helmet, hit the opposing player and he of the Broncos, and he just went down in a heap. I mean, the guy was just totally incapacitated, just lying there, and it was just a very hard thing to watch. But there is some very good news coming out of the hospital right now. He is out of not sedated any longer. He's able to wiggle his toes, bend his hip, move his ankles. Basically, he is showing a lot of movement, and this is a huge deal considering that I believe it was a surgeon at a press conference previously the other day that said that there is only a 5% or 10% chance that Mr. Everett was ever going to walk again, and it seems like those chances are becoming a little bit more, larger now that this news has come out. And I can't express how happy I am. It's never good to see. I mean, I'm an Eagles fan, it was hard. It would be hard to see a player like on an opposing team like the Cowboys or the Giants suffer an injury like that and actually be happy about it. It was it was a great thing, and I just hope the best in his rehabilitation, and I wish the best for him and his family. And I don't think he's ever going to play football again, but I sure hope he's going to be able to get around, walk, and become continue to be a human being who is able to use his lower and upper extremities. But I wanted to move on, have a little bit more. Well, actually, that was pretty uplifting. But I wanted to get into some bleaker news, I should say. I want to talk about the Bill Belichick, the New England Patriots, and what is now being considered by many experts and news media as Tapegate. Apparently, the New England Patriots were illegally videotaping defensive signals being called by Jets defensive coordinators during their game, which apparently is a huge no-no. Also, the New England Patriots have been warned of such things and were accused of such things by the Green Bay Packers last year by a former general manager who had noticed something of foul play during a game earlier than the Packers game in November. And there was also a report by Jack Del Rio where they're having communication problems, and now that is believed to be something involving the New England Patriots. However, that other stuff is speculatory. The part where this guy had his video videotape confiscated and taken by NFL security officials is not, and the fact that it is illegal is also not an accusation. What he did was illegal, and there is a large contingency that sees this as a very big deal, and then there's also another contingency that are saying that, okay, well, he broke the rules. Other teams do stuff like this. It's water under the bridge, fine them, do whatever you need to do, Goodell, and let's move on. I have a problem with the people like, let's say, Sean Salisbury, who says that this should be just, water under the bridge. And I understand the fact that teams cheat and they do everything to, gain an edge, but when you are warned by the commissioner of the National Football League and you are under suspicion in the first place of video videotaping other teams, and when the Roger Goodell says, okay, don't do this again or you will be heavily penalized, they go out the first week of the season and do it and defy the NFL commissioner. Now, if they had, I don't know if it would have really changed if they had done this in week 15 or week 16, but just the audacity to just do it blatantly and during the first week of the season, I think shows a lack of disrespect to the NFL and the integrity of football. And I think that Bill Belichick, in addition to maybe a draft pick or two being taken away from these guys, that Bill Belichick is rightfully suspended for however, maybe two games. I'll throw that number out there and say two games. People are saying, well, it didn't have any effect on the game, and that's fine. There was no part in my defense when I was talking about this with other people that it tainted the game at all. But the fact that it is illegal to do it, it broke a rule that is clearly written in the NFL rulebook, and to blatantly defy orders by the NFL commissioner to not do it is just, I think it's a total slap in the face, and I think that the New England Patriots should be punished for it. I don't think there's anyone out there that's saying that they shouldn't, but the severity of the penalty is, you know, varying, as is being told by other people, but to varying degrees, such as just fine them, you know, take one or two draft picks, or go as far as suspending Bill Belichick. And I think that, you know, people have said cheating is cheating, and then some people who said that are kind of like reneging that now. And, you know, mostly it's been New England Patriots fans that I've talked to, who I've been friends with, and they say, you know, the Barry Bonds thing is, you know, steroids and cheating is a different level there. But as soon as cheating comes, you know, with the New England Patriots, their hometown team, it's, oh, no, this isn't that big of a deal as far as cheating goes. And these were the same guys who said cheating is cheating. It doesn't matter whether it's on a large or low or a minute scale. Cheating is cheating, and I think that you need to be uniform when you talk about sports in general, like Barry Bonds and steroids, and when you talk about the New England Patriots and them videotaping the New York Jets. If you're gonna be, you don't want to sound like a hypocrite, so don't be one. You know, stand by your word and don't renege on what you said previously. And I'm tired of people being hypocritical about this entire situation. Cheating is cheating. They need to be punished. They need to be punished severely, made a point that this is not going to be allowed in the NFL and that this is not going to tarnish the integrity of the National Football League. And I really think that Roger Goodell needs to do something severe so that this doesn't happen again, especially, and I'll keep saying it over and over again until I'm red in the face. If you were told to do something by your boss, you need to do it. And that goes for any job, anywhere. If your boss says you will not do this, you cannot do this, or you will be punished, then you cannot do it. And in this case, Bill Belichick said, you know what, screw Roger Goodell, it's not a big deal. Well, you know what, Bill, it is a big deal, and your press conference, just like Drew Rosenhaus's with Terrell Owens, was a joke. And I think that you should have been more upfront with people, because you obviously did something wrong. You admitted to doing something that was illegal, and you broke some kind of rule, but you didn't say what it was. And I think that it was a cowardly act on your part, and I think that your integrity is going to suffer from this, not as a head coach, but your personal integrity as a person. You're still a great coach. You were a great coach before this happened, and you will probably continue to be a great coach, but I was very disappointed. I thought you're more of a stand-up guy, even though I'm, like I said, an Eagles fan, not a big fan of the Patriots, always respected you, not so much anymore. But enough with, you know, Tapegate. Let's move on to Philadelphia Phillies and their fading playoff hopes. As I said before, Eagles fan, I'm a Phillies fan, so on and so forth. Just a Philly fan in general. And watching the Philadelphia Phillies choke again at the last part of the season is just becoming way too common. And they are now 7 games out of the National League East. They are currently 3 games out of the wild card now. And they are 4-6 in their last 10. They've lost 2 straight. They've lost to the Colorado Rockies. The last 2 games got blown out tonight, 12-0. Even though they did turn a triple play, but you know, that really doesn't mean anything when you get shut out by a team and in a park, in your home park, nonetheless, and which is considered a hitter's park. You only managed 4 hits. So I don't know what to do with the Phillies. I mean, their starting pitching needs to improve. Their highest paid players in their team are, get this, Freddy Garcia injured, John Lieber injured, and then Jamie Moyer, who is probably, you know, he's like, you know, 60, 65 years old. So we pay all this amount of money for pitching, and this is what we get. We get 14th highest ERA in the NL, in the National League at 4.89. We're dead last in opposing OPS. We are almost dead last in WHIP, and our quality starts is second to last as well. I really thought that the Phillies were going to get a lot better now that when Tom Gordon and Brett Myers came back into the bullpen. I thought that was going to help a lot, but you know, it was just injury after injury to the starting pitching of the rotation. I will say that Kyle Kendrick has been pitching fantastic for the Phillies. He's really, you know, turned into a great story. I don't know why not enough people are really talking about this kid. 8-3, 3.7 ERA. I mean, next to Cole Hamels, he's probably been the best pitcher that we've had. And it's a shame, too, because, I mean, the Phillies are first in every statistical category for batting in the National League except stolen bases, which they are second. I mean, this is a team that has Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Shane Victorino, and Jimmy Rollins. I mean, that is a vaunted lineup. And I mean, if they just get one more freaking pitcher in that starting rotation that is at least, you know, like a 15-game winner, the Philadelphia Phillies could be contending right now with the Mets. I'm not saying that they could beat them, but they certainly would be at least one or two games, only one or two games back instead of seven. It's so frustrating. They lost their series to Atlanta. Probably going to lose this series to Colorado. The series wraps up tomorrow, 7:05. They play the next three games following that at New York. Then they play St. Louis at St. Louis, and then they finish that up with at Washington, a three-game series at Washington. And they need to desperately win those games. I mean, it would be great if they could sweep the Washington series, take 2 or 3 from St. Louis, and take 2 or 3 from New York. I would love to see the Phillies in the playoffs. I mean, I haven't seen them go into the playoffs since 93 when that whole mess happened. Something I really don't enjoy talking about too much. Mitch Williams isn't one of my favorite people, but I can't blame him because I hate Jim Fregosi even more for leaving him in. Anyway, I want to wrap up this kind of short East Coast Bias segment, well, episode, I should say, with a little rundown of the Eagles game versus the Green Bay Packers. This was played at Lambeau Field. The Eagles did end up losing 13-16 on a, I think it was not a last-second field goal. There was 2 seconds left. They were able to get a kickoff, but you know, of course, they fumbled on that, too. So anyway, the Eagles ended up losing, like I said, 13-16. They outgained them 283 yards to 215. They had more first downs. They converted more third downs than Green Bay did. But they had 8 penalties for 76 yards compared to Green Bay, who had 6 for 35. And they had 3 turnovers. 2 fumbles lost, of course, on punt returns, which is inexcusable. Catch the ball. Do a fair catch. When J.R. Reed ran 10 yards and sprinted to that ball, I knew exactly what was going to happen. I said to myself, you know what? J.R. Reed is A, going to be cut from this team, and B, he's going to fumble this ball, and we're going to lose this game. I knew it exactly. As soon as he started running after the ball, I knew exactly what he was going to do. He was going to botch it. And just give it away to Green Bay. And then Donovan McNabb, who I didn't understand what people were talking about, takes 2 years for to get over an ACL injury. The guy was moving, you know, very, very well out of the pocket. The only problem was that he just was not very accurate. And I think that's just rush he's going to shake off. I think he's going to be much better in the Washington game, and I guarantee you he throws for over 250 yards and 2 touchdowns. You can write that down. You can tap that in the stone. That is a guarantee from yours truly. Brian Westbrook rushed well out of the backfield, 20 carries, 85 yards for 4.3 yards a carry. And a great story out of this was how well Kevin Curtis played. He looked fantastic. Jason Avant looked very good, but I was sad to see that Reggie Brown only had one reception during the game. But, you know, that is the way of a wide receiver. Week to week, they're not really that consistent performer, so perhaps Reggie Brown could have a bigger game this coming Monday when they play the Washington Redskins at home, which will be their home opener at Lincoln Financial. The one thing I was very, very high on was how well this defense played. They had 4 sacks. Kearse had a half a sack. Monte Rager had one. Trent Cole had 1.5 sacks. And Mike Patterson had a sack. The linebackers looked good. Played very well against the run. It was overall a fantastic effort by the defense. It was just such a shame that we had to keep turning the ball over every freaking time on a punt. And that one that Greg Lewis just, you know, he just call a fair catch. Wave your hand in the air. It's really not that hard. I mean, I'm doing it right now. No one can see me doing it, but I am. I'm waving my hand right now for a fair catch. I mean, just do it. I mean, if the guy... I don't understand. Is it really that hard to look at the guy and then look up? Maybe it is. Maybe I don't know how hard that is. But it seems very simple to me to look at the field, see where these guys are, and be like, okay, well, that guy's flying way too quickly at me. I'm going to call a fair catch so that, you know, he doesn't hit me, the ball flies out, and the opposing team gets a touchdown. But, you know, that's exactly what happened, and I want to blame Donovan and the coaching. I really wish I could, but Donovan McNabb is coming off that ACL injury. I will give him a pass for this one game. He better shake off that rust against the Redskins, because if we end up going 0-2 in our first two games, I really think that the Philadelphia Eagles could kiss their Super Bowl hopes goodbye. And I really think that Dallas would be winning the NFC East, because if the Eagles, like I said, don't win on Monday, it'll just be a total letdown, because I really thought that the Green Bay game is going to be easy. I really thought this Redskins game is going to be easy, and it may turn out to be a lot tougher than we thought, especially with Lito Shepard going to be unable to go. Will James will be starting in his spot, so that'll be interesting to see what Jason Campbell does with Santana Moss and his other receivers. They just signed Rashay Caldwell recently, you know, provide a little bit more depth at wide receiver. But anyway, it was just a very hard game to watch. It was just a poor game overall, and I was just very, very sick to my stomach after watching that game, because, I mean, we had that. Favre didn't play well. Brandon Jackson didn't run the ball effectively at all. 15 carries for 40 yards, and then we had that freaking 18-yard play by Wynn, that little shovel pass, which had to be an act of God, because there's no way that he should have gotten that ball out. Well, hopefully the Eagles can get their act together on Monday against the Washington Redskins. Like I said, it will be their home opener at the Link, so it should be an interesting game to see whether Donovan McNabb shakes off the rust, really performs to, you know, the expectations that Philadelphia fans expect from him. And, you know, hopefully we'll get the 1-1 and, you know, start, you know, on that winning streak and end up winning the NFC East in the end. Well, that is all the topics I have for this week. Thanks again for listening, folks. We appreciate all of you who have listened to us from the beginning, and thank all of you who have just started tuning in. Hopefully by next week, Jason's schedule will have cleared, and we can again be two-manning the podcast. On next week's show, we will begin a segment called NFL Rundown, in which we will run down the NFL scoreboard and the major news surrounding the week that was in football. Once again, thank you for listening. This was East Coast Biased, and I am your handsome host, Brent Caddy. Take us out, guys. I need you right.